I want to talk about Azus. That's what we're holding in the sugya of Azus. With the Yevanim, Anemshel to Anamer. Anamer is a cat, a leopard, and they're very brazen. They go where they don't belong. You can't get them out. That's what leopards are. They're not intimidated. Walk right up to them, yell in the face, they don't even turn their face. They're not intimidated, they go straight there. It's called Azus, Azpanim. They don't look down, you look at them, they don't look down in embarrassment. We have someone that's a Baishan. Someone that possesses the Midah Busha. So it's difficult to make eye contact with them. You look at them, they look down. They look to the side. Embarrassed. Azpanim. Azpanim means he's brazen faced. Look you straight in the eye and you can't stare him down. You have a staring contest, you're gonna lose. He's not gonna look away. Azus is always related to strength, to the power of metal. And that's what he saw in his dream. Daniel saw in his dream. He saw Yavan was a Namer, like a leopard, something from the leopard family. That's how he saw him. And when Brunetta saw it, Yavan was Nechayshes. It's brazen. Nechayshes.
Why do Nechayshes not any other metal?
As opposed to Basel. Edom is Basel. The oven is Nechayshes. I'm just going to guess, you know. We have four metals, Zav, Kesef, Nechayshes, and Barzal. So Zav and Kesef, the Chashivas of Zav and Kesef is one of value. Zav is a Kayach of Malucha. That's the Mukhanetz is Kayach. Bavo Zav because they rule.
Just what?
They rule. He's on the top, you know, in the Mukhanetz's dream. Bavo is the Rosh Shazav, the golden head. And Kesef is also a precious metal. And they have a certain Kayach HaShlita. Skipping to Barzal. So Barzal is stronger than the Chayshis. So you have Zav and Kesef which represent preciousness, some
bronze
kind of... What? Bronze. Barzal. Iron. No, Barzal is iron. So Zav and Kesef, they show some type of chashivas. That they're not just powerful nations, they're nations that they have royalty, monarchy, the ability to rule. There's a certain preciousness to them. That the power is not just brute strength. There's a value to it. Barzal is the other end of the extreme. There's just pure raw power, there's no culture, nothing whatsoever. It's strong, but it's not precious. It's common. It doesn't look nice. And then you have Nechashis, which is in the middle. Nechashis is very strong. Although it's not as strong, copper is not as strong as iron. But it has a strength. It's definitely stronger than gold and silver. Yeah. Gold and silver is very malleable. And it's easily shaped. And it has an appearance to it. It has a look to it. Iron, there's nothing about the look, the appearance, there's anything to it that you'd ever take notice of. It's dull, it's gray. It has an appearance, because everything in this world has an appearance, but there's nothing about it that's striking. But copper's not like that. There's a color to it. Shine up nicely. So it's not, you know, just force and brute strength, and it's not pure, it's not a kayak of a maluka. So it's a different type of strength. It's a strength of values instead of a physical strength. That's what I would think. It means you can't move me. I'm here, I'm not moving, I'm not going to change my mind, there's nothing you can do to convince me. So that's not a physical strength, that's a strength of values. So that's why it would be copper rather than iron. It wouldn't be gold or silver, it's just a theory. Nechashis is the metal of principles. I once heard a word from Meir Rabbi, Rabbi Yonis and David, about Nechashis. He gave a shiur about Nechashis. When Klal Yisrael sinned in the Midbar, so they were stricken with a magefa, a plague, and they were dying, the Kadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to make a Nechash HaNechashis. Take Nechashis and forge it in the shape of a snake, put it on top of a pole, and raise it up. And the people that were sick and dying, if they lifted up their eyes to Shemayim, when they saw the Nachash and Nechashis was lifted towards Shemayim, if they also looked towards Shemayim, not that they looked towards the Nachash, they looked towards Shemayim because of the Nachash. So then they were Mishrapim, Miad Mishrapim. And those that didn't look up to Shemayim, didn't lift up their hands to Shemayim, they died. So Rashi says, why did Hashem tell Moshe to make a Nachash and a Chashis? A copper Nachash. Why not, I don't know, like a fuzzy, squishy pillow Nachash? Or a beanbag Nachash? But why a copper Nachash? So Rashi says, Lashem Neifel or Lashem. It's Lashem Neifel, the one language, it's a vernacular. It's a Lashem, it's a vernacular that falls upon the another vernacular. Nachash, Nachashis, it's like it sounds the same. And my Rebbe, Rabbi Yonis and David Shlita, says, you think that Rashi just being quaint, you're making a very big mistake. Nachash, Nachashis, it sounds the same, why not? What Rashi means is that Nachash and Nachashis are the same. Now, at Bashkafa Rishayna, at first glance, there's no two things that can be more further apart than a Nachash and a Chashis. The characteristic that stands out the most about a Nachash is that it could attain any shape that it wants. It's a shapeshifter. It could be a square, it could be a circle, it could go around and back and forth and back and forth, and it could do anything. Its body is pliable, it could do anything it wants. It's not meshubed to any shape. And the Chashis is not like that. Whatever shape it's in, it's going to stay that way unless you exert tremendous force to change it. And there's some kind of comparison between them, because the Nachash, the comparison is because the Nachash represents the Kayach around this world. The Nachash was the first creature that represented Chet, represented the possibility, the existence of being over Tzivra Hashem. The Nachash was created to present all the available arguments, all the convincing arguments to Chava and to Adam that being over Tziva Hashem is the right thing to do. He was created to do that, and he was very good at it. He was adept. He went, you know, for this side. He went for, you know, if one argument didn't work, say, well, he went to the other side. Well, as long as he gets through, he doesn't care. The Nachash doesn't care. He gets through. You ever hear the Medrash when Avram was going to the Kedah with Yitzchak? So then he appeared like an old man to Avram Avinu, like a wise old man to Avram Avinu. He said, what are you doing? This is not sage advice. It's not sage counsel what you're doing. I'm an old man. Listen to me. Respect that. And Avram didn't listen to him. And he appeared as a young man to Yitzchak. What are you doing? You have your best years of your life ahead of you. If he wants to kill someone, let him kill himself. He's close to death anyway. You live, you know. So is he old or is he young? He's whatever he needs to be. He could be whatever he needs to be. He could be a woman. He could be filled with shechin. He could be an old man. He could be a young man. He could be filled with eyes. There's so many different surahs. The Chazal say with the satni, the tahara, the malchamavis. He's got a sword with poison dripping from it.
Manifestation of evil.
Mamish. Because evil takes all forms. There's only one thing that all the forms have in common. Get the job done. That's mamish what it's all about. So that's a nachash. That's why evil is affiliated with nachash. Because that's what a nachash does. A nachash has no form. So how's this nachashish? The Torah says, because evil has the appearance, the semblance of being empty and devoid of all shape, any commitment, you know, there's commitment issues. No commitment! But that's just the way it looks. Every single move, let's return to our mashal of the snake. Every single twist and turn or movement of the scales of the snake, whether it twists in this direction, turns itself into a pretzel, a circle, a square, or makes itself look like a dachshund or a balloon shape, whatever these snakes do. It appears random. It appears if there's no rhyme or reason. It appears as if the snake is choosing its own shape. And it could choose its own shape, and it's not under the control of any higher power. And that's the way it's supposed to look. It's engraved in copper. It must do that. It must keep, it's a petrified randomness. You know what I mean? It's a petrified randomness. I was talking to Chaim here. We're talking to Chaim about a computer that generates random numbers. Remember? About a computer that generates random numbers. Scientists need random numbers in their studies. They have to have numbers that don't have any patterns to it. For certain tests, if they want to isolate a cause or something, so they have to make sure that there's no patterns that might influence a result of a test. And if you have numbers in a pattern, so then it's like my physics teacher talked about, he took these tests in the military, and a lot of the tests have to do with what's the serial number of a certain part of an M16 rifle. You know, they all have numbers. You know, the trigger could be 00000066699972, that's on the test. And he said he always scored very high on these tests, this section, because they're multiple choice. And multiple choice, the ones that program the tests, they're trying to mislead you. So all you have to do is be aware of the way they're trying to mislead you, and then you know they're trying to make you look away from a certain answer, and that's the answer which is the right one. He was brilliant. Yeah, so he gave an example. If A is 8006693, and then B is 006692, and C is 006293, and 4 is 1005. Get rid of the one. Get rid of it. That's for sure not it. It's got to be one of the zeros. And then of the zeros, you take, you know, one is 693, one is 692, and one is 163. 163, right. So he said that he, and they had no idea how he was doing this. Sometimes you need random numbers. This test, that's not random. You want to have a real test? You want to beat my teacher? You can't have tests like this. You need to generate random numbers so that you know that he won't be able to detect a pattern. Otherwise, the test is not fair. So they have computer programs that generate random numbers, but they're not real random numbers because if you run the program time after time, and you say, give me, you know, 20 random numbers with 12 digits in it, each time it's going to come up with the same ones. So that's not random. It's producing the same random numbers time after time. So that means it's random numbers, meaning there's no sequence. You know, it's not like 2, 4, 6, 8, or not like 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. But it's a random pattern which the computer is programmed to produce every time you want a random number. So that's not random. There's no such thing as a random number. What you have is you have the appearance of a random number, but if you're deliberately searching for a random number, that's not random. Okay, that was the exciting thought. The mathematician or physicist, he was writing, it's a Jewish person was writing about this. He was talking about Ashkacha and Ashkacha Pratis, Ashkacha Klos. Now what we're talking now. And this is the Nachash. The Yitzhar has the appearance of a random number. But the randomness, it can't veer from the randomness. It must be random. So that's what Rabbi Anderson David said, that's Nachash and Achaishis. It's a nachash that it slithers in this direction, in that direction, without any pattern, without any, you know, you can't defeat it because you never know where it's going to go next. You don't know where it's going to strike from. You don't know what form it's going to take. But that's engraved in stone. It looks like it's random, but that randomness is iron. Nachash and nachash. So that's why, okay, that's him. We'll go, this is Yanni's question. That's why, of all the metals, Yavon. Yavon is connected to Chachma. Wisdom. Yavon, all the Xeris were designed to be Mevatel Torah, the Klai Shoshin of Torah, Lashkicham Torah Secha. The Torah should be removed from Klal Yisrael. Lashkicham Torah Secha doesn't mean to make Klal Yisrael forget Torah. You can't make somebody forget. Forgetting is a process. It's an internal process. It happens. You can't. You what? Whatever. You can brainwash them. You can brainwash them. Feed them high sugar, high starch, high sugar, low protein diets, or subject them to sleep deprivation, sensory deprivation. But Lashkiach Mitarei Secha means to Lashkiach Shikha means to forget. Shikha also means to cut off any form of connection. That's what Shikha is. That's what it really is. Lashkiach Mitarei Secha. The Yevanim, they worship wisdom. And that's why they couldn't tolerate the Klal Yisrael should have wisdom. Why not? Because someone that, to him, the only thing that matters is wisdom, cannot tolerate if someone has wisdom all their own. It was inaccessible to the Yevanim. An Umman is saying a B'nai'im Nasa. If you're a tailor, someone else is a better tailor, you hate him. He's a plumber, you don't hate him. Yevanim worship Chachma. So let's talk about this. Yevanim worship Chachma, and Klal Yisrael were Chachamim, and Yevanim are compared to a leopard, and to Nechayshis, and Klal Yisrael we discussed 2 weeks ago. We were talking about 2 weeks ago. Klal Yisrael, the Gemara calls them Azim Shiva Umais. They're the most brazen of all the nations. It's Mashmid even more brazen than the Yevanim. So Klal Yisrael is brazen, the Yevanim are brazen, the Yevanim pursue Chachma, Klal Yisrael has a Chachma that the Yevanim can't catch up to. So the Tavadim read the Gzeiros against them.
As brazen as Jews are, we're also, we have Busha, though.
Correct. Because the Gemara says that they're Baishanim. And that's a stira. That's a stira. That Klai Yisrael's Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gaim Lechassanim. And the Gemara says anyone that doesn't have those 3 meters is not from Klai Yisrael. Someone that has no Busha. Someone that has no shame. It's a shtaka simon. That there's something up there that doesn't belong there. So you have a stira. So the miss is the Mashiach is the Akasha. It must be Sakha Sanhedrin. So the Mashiach says this is a side. We'll start with what brazenness is. What's the asus? Does he say these words? I'm sure you've heard them before in different forms. And these words are, there's two words that describe everything in creation. Everything in creation falls into one of these two categories. Chaimer and Surah. If you want to do more research on this, or want to learn something of your own on it, there's a mimer called Chaimer Vitzura. It's in the Sefer Shirei Das, written by Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Leib Bloch, who was the Alter Talzer Rav. He was the Rav before the last one. He was the second to the last one. This is Sefer Shirei Das. We have it in the Beis Medrash, in the Neshkafa section. He has a shmuz about Chaimer Vitzura. But Chaimer Vitzura is everything in creation can be put into one of those two categories. And it's also relative. Something could be Chaimer in one regard, and it could be Tzura in another regard. For example, you have modeling clay. Play-Doh. I brought my kids over. I had to find activities for them this week. And I brought my kids over to my niece's house to play with her kids. And my great-niece got a present. It's one of these Play-Doh shapers. You put the Play-Doh, you pick up the lever, put the Play-Doh in, you slide, I guess it's like a stencil in place, pull down the lever, the Play-Doh gets pushed through the stencil, and you have a long log of star-shaped Play-Doh, or circle-shaped Play-Doh, or rectangular-shaped Play-Doh, and I was playing with my great-niece, it was amazing, it was such a tiny youth center. If you wondered where I was on Monday, I wasn't in yeshiva, I was playing with Play-Doh, and you know, before I put the Play-Doh through, it's Chaimer. Chaimer is that it has no form and it has no purpose. It could be anything. There's so much potential in Play-Doh. It could be anything. And until you push it through that gadget, the Shmichik, so then all the potential is there. It's total potential, and it can be anything. There's no limit. Once you put it through it, and it's star-shaped, so now it's only star-shaped, and all the other potentials are not there anymore. It became actualized. So before you push it through its chaimer, when you pull down the lever and it goes to the stencil, then it's a tzura.
How do you
put tzura? Tzadik vav resh hei. Tzura is like a picture, a form. Tzura. Then there's a tzura, which you are malbish on the chaimer. It's like a levush. And when the chaimer is the same chaimer, it's the same Play-Doh it was before I went through. And there's no change whatsoever. There's no metamorphosis.
Is it possible to have tzura without chaimer?
No. Tzura is only possible on top of chaimer. Tzura is a levush. It's impossible to have tzura. Tzura has to be a levush on chaimer. Tzura is the form. So once you interchange a form, so the chaimer was makabel tzura on it, and there's a levush of tzura on the chaimer. And these are words which you might as well get used to. Now, the reason why it's a lousy example is because even before you pushed it through, it had a tzura. It wasn't a very good tzura. But if you looked at it, you could tell, oh, that's Play-Doh. So even though it doesn't have the tzura of a star, or it doesn't have the tzura of an elephant, it has the tzura of a blob. But the tzura of a blob is also tzura. In fact, in this world, with the naked eye, we only could see chaimer if it had a tzura on it. Think about this for a moment. If you have the building block of creation, some kind of mass, you know, but there's no tzura to it, that means it doesn't have a form, you can't see it. You can't see raw chaimer. Because the eye sees tzuris. That's what the eye sees. There's something. It has to be something about it that can be seen. Now, if there's something about any type of object or item that can be seen, so that means you're seeing a color, or you're seeing a shape, that's a tzura. And if it doesn't have a color, it doesn't have a shape, if it doesn't have like a texture, then what are you seeing? You see tzuras. So in this world, is a world of chaimer tzura. In the world, you know, before this world, there were tzuras, you know, there was no chaimer. Hashem created. Tzura is the chachma of something. The tzura is what talks to you. If you see a pen, so there's the physical blob of the pen, just the makeup, plastic, you know, it's a pen. But then by looking at the tzura, so then you could determine its function. So the wisdom of the pen is in its tzura. So tzura is related with chachma. You could say this chachma and tzura in many different ways. You have a Talmud. He's a blob. Like a shapeless blob. There's nothing unique about him. There's nothing, you know. And then a Rebbe works with the Talmud to find the different potentials. Because the Talmud, before he learns, is pure potential. And there's nothing that, in some of this pure potential, there's nothing that sets him apart from anyone else. One blob is just like any other blob. Until you bring out the potential, all blobs are equal. And the Rebbe brings out the uniqueness and the individuality and shows the Talmud his kaikas, his strengths, and he starts establishing. So the Talmud is the clay and the Rebbe is the tzura, the chachma of the Rebbe. You have a canvas, you have an artist, you have a sculpture, you get the pattern, sculptor. Now the attributes of chaimer is a chaimer. Its sole potential is that something else or someone else should come from the outside and give it some type of form. It is a block of wood that it's waiting its whole life, not doing anything. It's passive. And its only hope for any type of attainment of anything is if someone comes from the outside, someone named Geppetto comes and makes Pinocchio. He looked for a certain cord of wood when he went, you know, he looked for a special, unique, tailor-made cord of wood to have his puppet emerge from the wood. So chaimer allows alteration, manipulation, whatever you want to call it. And tzura does that. Tzura makes an impact on the chaimer, and the chaimer allows itself to be impacted. Let's go to personalities, okay? So we're moving on. This is personalities. You have personalities, you have people that, okay, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? I don't know, whatever you want. That's a chaimer person. You want to go here? If that's what you want. Or do you want to go there? Whatever makes you happy. What? What?
Isn't that a married person?
No. No, that's a wimp.
Didn't mean to touch a sore spot, I'm sorry.
You didn't. That's a wimp. You could have similar scenarios. They'll play out in a very similar fashion. But one is a conscious decision to appear to concede or give in to the other in areas where it really doesn't matter. You know, it's like, I have an opinion, but it's more important that you should get what you want than I should get what I want, because that's what marriage is all about. So you make a conscious decision in something that there's no damage if you give in, and it's not, you know, you're not going to give in to someone in something that really matters. But wherever you want to go, there's no real enough community between the two places. So if the husband gives in to the wife, so then he's demonstrating chokhmah, because he's taking a decision which really it's pointless, and there's enough gemina, and he's turning into a chesed. He's turning into something like, I trust your decision making ability, and it means something to me, and I respect you. So he's making a conscious decision to use it as a way to enhance the relationship. That's not wimp. That's not being wimpy. And then you have someone that has no will of his own. And the reason why he's saying it is because he doesn't want to make choices. So that's, you know, so you'll have two people that they might respond to the same way, to the same question, and they have nothing in common. One is demonstrating strength, and the other is demonstrating weakness. I mean, this is really, really a very big topic. There's a famous Rabbeinu Yena that he talks about tshuva. The tshuva is the biggest gift that God gives to mankind, because in place of being doomed to eternal damnation forever, for all eternity, but you can do tshuva. And anyone that doesn't do tshuva, they have to do tshuva for not doing tshuva. And he gives a famous mashal. There's an avera. Hashem prepares an escape route. And someone who doesn't take advantage of it is doing an avera that he could escape. And he gives an example of prisoners that they're imprisoned, because that's what prisoners are. That's why you call them prisoners. And somehow or another, the inmates, they managed to dig a hole through to the outside. They dug a machteris. They dug a hole through the outside. And they all skipped the hole except for one. One, he stayed behind. And when the jailkeeper came and he sees that everyone went away, and there was one that stayed behind, so he rebuked him, and he hit him, he struck him. He says, "Kishay hayayim." He said, "What's the matter with you? How could you not run for your life? You know, in prison people die. In prison, you could die here. If somebody dies in prison, it's very dangerous if someone dies in prison. Dying in prison is dangerous. It's hazardous to one's health. And how did you not care enough about your life that you didn't run away? Like I asked my Rebbe, Chaim Steinschlitter. I said, why is Rebbeinu Yehuda using this, you know, what's the point of this marshal? The nimshal is that you're supposed to do tshuva because someone that did an avera, he rebelled against the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and then doing tshuva is the escape. He's going back to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Doing tshuva is a mitzvah. But running away from jail is not. The marshal and the nimshal don't fit. The person will say, I don't want to break the law of the king. My Rebbe said that's not why he didn't run away. If he didn't run away because he's trying to keep the law of the king, so then the jailer knew why he didn't run away. He ran away because he's a coward. He's afraid to face the outside. That's what he said. He's afraid to face the outside. He's going to go outside. He's going to be responsible. In prison, there are people that... It's called I don't know what it's called. It's called a...
Recidivism
rate. There was someone that he went into a store and he took something in front of a security camera, said they'd throw him in jail. This way he'd get three meals a day and he wouldn't have to make any decisions. He wouldn't have to have any responsibility for his life. He'd be in a... He stayed in jail because he didn't want to be free. He wanted to be a slave. No decisions made for him. I mean, he didn't have to make his own decisions. He doesn't have to take responsibility for his life. Everything is decided for him. He's comfortable with that. So for that, you get hit for that. He didn't stay there because he's a law-abiding citizen. He's not a law-abiding citizen. He's a criminal. That's why he's there in the first place. Innocent people are not put in jails, right? That's what we like to believe.
Well, I'm gonna tell you
that. Right. All right, this guy's a criminal. He's Chaimer. Yep. He wants to stay Chaimer. He wants to be this blob, Mr. Potato Head, blob of modeling clay that the jailkeeper comes and puts into there. Put ears on him, put big ears, little ears, and put the red nose with the mustache. And he doesn't have to make any decision, Mr. Potato Head. In there. This is Chaimer. There's another personality type. Leader, there's a group, he's going to give form to he gives form to himself, and he gives form to others. And people look to him for ideas, for inspiration. You know, someone that came up with an idea to promote Achdus among the Shanabat, everyone should do one thing together. And he had some suggestions, which I didn't think were worth pursuing.
They couldn't agree on the suggestion.
Yeah, I mean, the doctors. But someone like that is a tsura personality. Because he is going to dictate to others what their form is going to be, and they're going to accept his tsura upon them. People with the tsura personality, the type 1 tsura personality. So they exert their tsura on their surroundings. And it's very hard to make an impact on them. It goes in one direction. There's a claw and hooker's cautious that when something's heated up and the blea is not going out, so then the pot doesn't, while it's regurgitating the bleas are on the way out because of the heat, so at the same time it's not going to absorb something. It's tarred lemiflet. It's tarred. It's a sulay bala. It's not berleya. Someone that sees an ish tsura, that to him he has form. He doesn't need anybody else to tell him what form is. He doesn't need anyone's ideas or concepts. And the whole world would be great if everything would be in his image. The world would be a great place if everybody thought like just like me. It's an ish tsura. It could be a good thing. Or it could be a very bad thing. But whether it's good or bad, it is. So when you tell you be all up to them, you talk to people and they're not listening to you. You try and change their mind and you're not going to get anywhere. Because they don't accept anything from outside of themselves. It's Chaim and Tzura. Now the next Nakuda. This is all based on the Maral. The Maral writes about this in his other Sfarim. The next Nakuda, as we said, that the Chaimer represents a non-thinking, passive blob, and the Tzura represents the Chachma, the Yamalbish on the blob, to give the blob some kind of wise purpose. You know, before you shape the blob, there's no Chachma in it because there's nothing that it can be used for that has anything to do with wisdom. It's not a wise thing. It's dumb. It's dumb. Someone that pursues wisdom, to them wisdom is the ultimate. What's wisdom? Is that Chaim or is that Tzura? Wisdom is Tzura. The tzura of the thing is the chachma of the item. A pen that doesn't work is not smart. A pen that works is smart. because it's a wisdom tool. You can use it for the pursuit of the chachma. You can, it has a purpose. And the purpose is a purpose that makes sense. And it has a purpose that will advance you in your pursuit of wisdom. A pen is very, very, you know, you could do a lot of things with pens.
But a pen is still potential.
Well, the usage of a pen before you use it is potential, but the function of it is clear. It's already come out. Now, just all you have to do is use it. It has to come out. So the Yevanim, they pursued wisdom. And that was the only thing that mattered to them. Nothing else mattered to them but wisdom. Wisdom for the sake of wisdom. They loved wisdom. They lived for wisdom. You talk to Yevani, you're not going to make an impact on him. They haven't worked out their way. They want to think through it themselves. And you could say the smartest, wisest things to them. It's not going to penetrate. They're a number. They're us. They're like a leopard. They're nechayshus. Klal Yisrael is also us. They're also us. They're also Reidif Acha Chachma. They also give Tzurah to everything. They give Klal Yisrael makes their imprint on everything else. You try and make an impact on a Jewish person. Go try it. Their culture, their way of thinking is something that pervades the Bria. They give off. They don't absorb. They're also us, because they're very close to Chachma. They're very close to Ruchnius. And with that, it's in regards to the world at large. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all that powerful asis is only when they're facing or turned towards or focused on the blob of the world that they are supposed to put the tzura on. Klal Yisrael is in this world in order to give form to all the blob of the world. The purpose of iPhones is not Temple Run. The purpose of iPhones is Daf Yomi. That's why it came into this world. And that is the reason why it came into this world. Klal Yisrael gives Surah to all the blobs into the world. They're asses. And Klal Yisrael, to them, the Iker is Chachma. And Chachma is to bring out the wisdom in everything. Things shouldn't just be shapeless blobs. So the Yevanim and Klal Yisrael, so they both run after Chachma. So that's why Klal Yisrael is as, and they're also leopards. Where do you see that Klal Yisrael is a leopard? Where are they compared to a leopard?
Kitten.
What?
Says in the kitten.
What?
Havi
Askanama. It's the first halacha of Shulchan Aruch. Havi Askanama. And Yevanim Askanama. The thing is, what's the difference between Yevanim and Klal Yisrael? The Yevanim are Askanama because they worship wisdom and they feel that they have the wisdom. If they have the wisdom, why should they accept anybody else's wisdom? Klal Yisrael is as Kanamu because they have Hashem's wisdom. If they have Hashem's wisdom, why should anybody else's wisdom, any other else's wisdom is illegitimate, it's inferior. So why should they budge from the way they understand things? They have Hashem's wisdom. Yevanim believe that they're at the heights of their wisdom. They understand everything humanly possible. And Klal Yisrael, they have faith, they have betachin, that the things that are taught to them, handed down to them, is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom. And when you have HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is there anyone who tries to convince you otherwise, that the wisdom is to be found otherwise, is not going to budge you. If I don't have their wisdom, Klal Yisrael have Hashem's wisdom. What's the nafkamina? If the wisdom is your wisdom, you figured it out, you understand it, you thought of it, so then you're not going to let anything make an impact on you. Why should you let someone that's not as smart as you make an impact on you? He doesn't have the same cock as I do, so I'm not going to let him make an impact on me. Him or any man, vegetable, mineral, anything. If it's my wisdom that I have attained, I understood, I studied, I observed, and I understand, so nobody in the world could tell me, could influence me or impact me. So I'm a number, I'm Oz. I am the form of all things. I'm not formable. I'm not malleable. Klal Yisrael has the same confidence, if not greater, in the wisdom that they possessed, that they are 100% right and nobody else can push them away. The thing is, Klal Yisrael has a source for the wisdom. That source is called God. The reason why they're so confident, the reason why they're so k'shei ayrif, stiff-necked, it's a compliment, k'shei ayrif, is because they know that they are the ones with the ultimate wisdom that's the form of all creation.
They were Shear before they got the Torah, though.
Yes. And afterwards. And they are the ones, and you can't convince them otherwise. Why? Because they're such strong betachen, and where they received the wisdom from in the first place, that you can't budge them. They might not. I might not understand everything in the Torah, but the one I got it from, he understands it, and I trust him implicitly. 100%. So you're not going to budge me. It reminds me of, I tell you this, Maisa. I was once Zeichet to be Mesela Kedushin in the Chasna. And there's a lot of Menhagim, it's different. There's some Menhagim, the Sephardim have the Menhagim, and the Litvish have the Menhagim, and the Chassidim, they have the Menhagim, and the Menhagim, they all have, there's reasons why you do it one way and not another way. There's usually a deep reason behind, and it's not always clear to all what the reason is why you do it one way or another. And I was under the kippah, and I was doing it the way my rebbeim told me to do it, which is the way I did it. And I learned halachas, but a lot of the things you do under the kippah are not in Shulchan Aruch. It's with Cyrus. This is the way you do it. And I was doing it that way, and this guy, he was one of the Edom, and he was telling me that was wrong, and I should do it this way. First of all, it's not his business to do that. You know, no matter how big he is or how... and how small I am, but Lamaise, I was doing it. He shouldn't have mixed in. You know, you can get the Mitzvah Kedushin nervous, and you can make a mistake, and then what? You know, it's just not. You don't do it. You say they didn't ask you to be Mitzvah Kedushin. They asked somebody else to be. That's the way it goes. You don't do it. But he decided he's going to do it, and he wanted me to change things. And I said, you don't do it like that. And he said, under the chuppah, he's telling me, oh, why don't you? I said, the minute is not like that. He said, oh, a minute. Where'd that minute come from? And I had to take care of this very quickly. I couldn't deal with it. And we had to get on with the show. So I turned to him, I whispered in his ear. And I said like this. I said, you might be bigger than me in learning. You might know more than I do. You might be more experienced. I said, but there's nothing that you're going to do or say that's going to get me to do it any different than my rebbeim told me to do it. So that's okay, that's what I told him. This is what my rebbeim do it, I'm doing it like that way, and there's nothing you can do, you can tell me to do it, you can tell me the reason why, you can tell me why I have to. I said, I'm not budging, I do it the way they do it. And that's Klal Yisrael's Azus. So the Yevanim's Azus is that they're so confident in the way they figure things out that you can't budge them because they're smarter than you are. They've worked it out. You're going to come, you're an inferior, your intellect is inferior to them. They are a number, they're a leper, they are copper. You can't, they're the ones that put the form on you. You don't put the form on them. But Klal Yisrael's Azus comes from the fact that they get it from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And they're not budging. So that means that anyone that tries to get them to budge, to move, to rizach, in Yiddish you call it rizach, up to tailing, you know, to break away. Because it's blocking. So then they're vicious. But But when they turn to Kadosh Baruch Hu, we're the parchment for your ksav, we're the clay for your sculpture, and that's where Bush is. They could be bashanim, that means they could be embarrassed, they could have like shame, and they could be brazen, and it could have been the same nation, same entity. It's, you know, you're brazen to certain entities, and then the busha in settings of your shemayim. It's not a steer. There's a medrash in Shir Shirim. The pasuk says in Shir Shirim, Yainasi b'chagvei hasela, my dove in the crack of the rock. That's what the dog, they find refuge in the crack of a rock. You're my dove in the crack. Well, they find you. But I'm Rabbi Yechanan. That when, you know, my Hashem is talking. The relationship of Hashem with Klal Yisrael is that you're my dove. You're in the sea. You're mine. And you're faithful. A dove is faithful. You're a faithful dove. And you're a gentle dove. And that's our relationship. You're soft. You're gentle. You're kind. You belong to me, we belong to each other. I will eat the umas ha'olam, but when it comes to the nations of the world, k'machai is your wild beast. And it brings all the pesukim in Parshas Vayechi. Yud is like an ayah, dan is like a nachash. It talks a lot about nachashim there also. Glad nachash, really, nachash and nachashis and yavan. So if you want, it's a medrash here, shirim, it's in the beginning, Parshas Beis. It's in the beginning of the Medrash Rabbah Shir. This is your mom, you're like a serpent that strikes, and they better be aware of you, and you're so vicious, and you're going to protect everything. It's the same thing! My Rabbi of Gifty used to quote this Medrash. In Yiddish, a yarn is a taibala. Taibala, dav, taibah. It's a little bit, the D is like the T, and the B is like the V. Davala, taibala. Tybee, you ever heard the name Tybee? Toby? Okay, Tybala. Mein Tybala! Might be, but anybody messes with Mein Tybala? A ferocious lion or a venomous snake. So this is, you know, Klal Yisrael, Yavan, they know that they can't be Klal Yisrael. They want to, they say, we can't have it, we don't want anyone to have it, they make Xeris. Some will be Mamshech. Remember, this is Haskala, is the beginning of this end.
I wanted to know, did they have this das when they would do this, or was